Scobedo, Bedo. Well, we had a fun day today. When was the last time you went to the circus?
Oh, we went to the circus today, and it was really fun. I liked it. A lot of activity, a lot of entertainment, good fun. And as a matter of fact, tonight at 12:30, we're going to start interviewing some of the people from the circus. The ringmaster, Tim Holtz, will be first. Find out. That's an entirely different life, a whole new life that they lead. But it was very, very enjoyable. I wonder when the last time Streeter went to a circus. When was the last time you went to a Ringling Brothers circus, Streeter?
Oh, it's been a long, long time.
Yeah, I went this afternoon.
Well, if I had a couple of tickets, maybe, I don't know, whether I'd be able to find time to go or not.
Well, you can take time. They have afternoons, Sundays, evenings. People were worried about you. I forget who told us at first that you were in the hospital, then we called up and you were at home resting.
Sure, lying right in my own little bed, sleeping.
And you said, can a guy take a couple of days off?
Right. I have to get used to retirement, you know. You can't just go into a thing like that abruptly. It's liable to be too much for you.
Yeah, let me see. When is your retirement? When is it effective?
July 1st.
Yeah.
My last working day is the last day in June.
Many people have been calling up. I know that you haven't been listening because you've been getting your rest, but many people from that area of New Hampshire, and we've been having also some contests on the Israel River, what the Indian
really?
Name was before, and
oh.
And people live in this area from that area originally, you know, and they reminisce about some of the places. They want to know exactly what's the name of this seminary that you're going to teach at. Whereabouts is it?
White Mountains Seminary.
White Mountains,
White Mountains Seminary.
And whereabouts is it in Lancaster?
Right in Lancaster. They are going to be using that big inn that is near the motel on Main Street. I don't know the name of it, but I think maybe it's even named Main Street. And there are several buildings right there that will be utilized this first year. And we're in the process of constructing brick quarters just about, I would say, three-quarters of a mile out of town toward the east on that main road. And I'm not familiar enough with the area to be able to tell you the name of it. But they're also building a cathedral right on the top of that mountain, overlooking Lancaster.
Where are they getting the money for that, Streeter?
Cathedral
is a pretty expensive structure.
The good Lord is providing it through people who are interested in that work.
Building funds, eh? John, do you want to contribute a few bucks to the building fund?
Another thing they do is they are offering that people who lend to the seminary and for these projects, they are paying them 8% interest if they leave their money in a certain specified time. And that's high interest, you know. And that's where some of the money is coming from.
How many students will they have there? Will they have in September?
They're getting applications every day, so I can't tell you exactly how many there will be when school actually opens in September. But
what will you be teaching?
I know that two of the things that I plan to be teaching are biblical archaeology, geography of the Middle East, and also I plan to teach some Spanish for possible missionary work.
Right. What's this book you have here? Keeping
well,
young
I understand. Somebody said you had a birthday yesterday. Is that true?
That's true.
Well, happy birthday
May
to you.
May 16th, yes. All day today, as a matter of fact.
Well, seeing as you're another year older,
yes.
This is a book you'd better get familiar with because it's entitled Keeping Young and Living Longer. And the subtitle is How to Stay Active and Healthy Past 100. It's by Joseph P. Prochovic. He is an MD and a doctor of science. And it has a special appendix on how to survive a heart attack, which is important. And this is published out in California. I'm surprised that more and more books are being published out in California. You know, normally books are published by New York publishing houses, but this is the Sherborne Press in Los Angeles.
La Cienega Boulevard.
That's right. And it's quite interesting. Now, basically, the thesis is this. If you can avoid the degenerative chronic diseases, your chances of living to a ripe old age are good. And many people don't want to live to a ripe old age unless they can avoid senility, unless they can be vigorous and healthy and alert. And this author says that if you do avoid these chronic diseases of old age, the chances are you will be alert and you will be alive, you will be enthusiastic, and you will not be senile.
I interviewed this doctor. He was very good.
When?
John Asbrock, how long ago did we interview him? I remember the names. He's a Czech or Hungarian, maybe 2 months ago.
And how did you happen to learn about him?
I think the publisher of the book contacted us.
That's interesting.
How come he didn't send me a book, though?
Well, if you talked to him, I should think he would have. Well, careful tests, it says, reveal that our strength and swiftness begin to lessen in the middle 20s. That's for everybody. Yeah, I didn't think it started that early. This decline in strength and performance is accompanied by a decline in recuperative powers. And it goes on to say that the skin wound that heals on a 20-year-old in 1 week needs 2 weeks to heal on a 40-year-old. Well, now, you know, if that's the case, when you're 60 years old, it's going to take about three times as long. And then it says, if you permit stresses to act upon us day after day, month after month, year after year, these comprise the disease-inducing, life-shortening errors which sap our strength and shorten our lives. Do you have any stresses in your life that you should avoid?
No, not at this time I don't. As a matter of fact, knock on wood, things are going smoothly for me at this time of my life, which is very nice. No stresses.
Well, you are lucky because...
When a person does have stress, though, I've had the stress. And I can see how it would weigh you down quickly and make you feel ill. And you
yes.
can become ill from that. You're not at ease, so there's dis-ease.
Right.
How's
exactly.
That?
That's very good.
All right.
Well, it says that these stresses are many, so are the errors that we commit that encourage or tolerate them. You see, we make these errors. If we knew how to avoid these things that cause stress, then we would be more healthy. For convenience sake, these errors can be ordered into three categories. And you know the first one is bad nutrition can cause stress?
Yes.
Bad nutrition. The second is lack of exercise, and that would hit nearly everybody because most people don't get almost any kind of exercise. They don't get enough exercise. I get mine out in my garden, you see. And the third is overstrain or lack of relaxation. A lot of people never allow themselves to relax, never allow themselves to have a good time, never allow themselves to... They've got to be busy all the time. They have a compulsion of activity, and that's very bad. So those three major things can lead to stresses that will cut your life short. It says here, the really helpful remedies cost nothing except the avoidance of various errors of everyday life. And here's something that's very interesting, because a lot of people think that if your parents died at the age 60, then you're going to die at age 60. Or if your parents live to be 95, then you're going to live to be 95. But he says that each person has an inborn potential to live past 100 years. And each person, even if he has short-lived parents, can live up to his potential of 100 years of healthy, vigorous, active life. Well, I think that's very encouraging.
I do. That's encouraging is right.
They have a chapter in here saying, is it possible to prolong life? And then he goes into the history of some of these people. And Larry, this is so interesting. Robert Prohoda, in his book, Extended Youth, Promises of Gerontology, predicts that the next 20 years should give man the necessary know-how for complete control of the aging process. Isn't it too bad that we came along so soon? What are we going to do?
Well, maybe in another life.
In another life, I'll live forever, yes, in my next life. It says the components of the human body are in a dynamic state, being continually rebuilt, renewed, and replaced through the biosynthetic processes inside the tissue cells, Well, now that's encouraging, too. And you remember how somebody said that drinking alcoholic beverages would cause brain cell damage? He says here that about 100,000 brain cells disappear every day from the brain of every living individual and are lost irretrievably. Now, this is whether you drink alcohol or not. Did you know that you have 100,000 fewer brain cells tonight than you had this morning, Larry?
And I had two vodka martinis, too.
And that, so that added to it. That makes about 300,000.
Now, wait a minute. Now, it doesn't say how many brain cells are damaged with 1 ounce of vodka.
This doesn't, but the other book did. And the other book said it was very high. Now, I don't recall the figure, but it was probably 100,000. It says the human brain, though, contains 10 billion cells.
10 billion. I'll throw 100,000 away if I get 10 billion.
And it says that a daily loss of even 100,000 is a very small portion.
Sure.
But I'll tell you, I took 4 years of mathematics in high school through college algebra and that kind of thing. And I figured this up. And the yearly loss, it gets pretty high. Is 36,500,000 brain cells. And if you live to be 70 years old, your brain cell loss is 2,555,000,000.
Wait a minute, Now, how many do we start, how much do we start out with in the bank?
We start out in the bank, right here, with it, 10 billion.
Everyone gets 10 billion brain cells.
Right. Now, if in 70 years you use one-fourth of these, You lose them, and you do, because it figures out that way. 100,000 a day figures out to 2,555,000,000. That's a quarter of a billion that you lose in the course of 70 years. You've lost one quarter of your brain, so you couldn't possibly be as alert and as active and as fully what you were when you started out.
Okay, so I won't be.
But you know, if you keep the ones...
What I'll do is, by the time I have enough bread, I'll have someone take care of me.
Well, it says, though, that this pace can be modified by various influences from outside the body.
What are the influences? Tell me, my lord.
These three things that prevent aging.
Oh, right.
Nutrition, exercise, and relaxation.
Right, yeah, right.
Avoidance of strain and all that thing. And then it goes on to say that there are many causes of aging. And the first step in life prolongation, most probably, will be achieved through the application of chemicals called antioxidants. And it's a rather interesting thing here that some of these people who have experimented have made fortunes in Europe. On things products that they don't even allow in the United States. In fact, that I never even heard of in my whole life.
Let's see. Now, we're born. Are we born with 10 billion brain cells?
Right.
And yeah, but all those brain cells, a kid can't even change his own diapers.
Yes, but these have to be trained, you see. And these have a potential, but they are there.
They are there.
It says here that... The one theory, and this is the theory that Dr. Velazquez...
I know something with his name.
Oh, yes. A name
what
like
is that? Is that Hungarian or Czechoslovakian?
I really don't know what that is. Let's see, where did he go to school? He went to school in Europe and all over the place. In Paris and New York and California.
That's a Slav name, I think, though.
Probably is, although Polish names are very complicated and difficult to pronounce. Well, anyhow, he says that the
I had a couple of jokes, but I better cool it.
Yeah, no, let's not have any of those racial nationalistic
That's
jokes.
Right.
That always gets us into
right.
trouble.
I won't say anything.
Well, anyhow, the accumulation of toxic substances in the blood or inside the cells is in part responsible for the body's gradual deterioration with age. And he goes on to explain how this happens. And now, Dr. Ohrenkreich at the University Hospital in New York takes blood and withdraws it from your body and washes it and then reinserts it into your body, washed of these impurities, And this is supposed to help rejuvenate you. Just
this,
like...
this is just a, speaking of washing, this is just a little aside of what we're talking, but when I was at the circus, this actually happened, Streeter. I was at the circus, and there was a lady sitting a child, sitting with a child on its on her lap next to me, and this is the truth, Streeter.
Yes?
And I'm watching the lions and the tigers, and we're in close company there because the chairs are pretty close, and the child did something, and she changed the diapers right next to me.
Oh, that was interesting. Were you watching that, or were you watching the circus?
I
you didn't know which to watch, huh?
Holy, with the elephants going and with the kid. what a time. Disposable diapers. I thought that manly.
Well, remember, that kid had a lot of brain cells, though. More maybe than you've got.
Ended up in a diaper.
Well, have you ever wondered why, if these things about old age are true, that people haven't been able to find some means of prolonging life before now?
Oh, I think man has always been searching for that.
Well, the reason he says is that no other field in biomedical research has been so utterly neglected. People have neglected it. They have just talked about it. And here's something. I thought this was interesting, that one of the first experiments in prolonging vigor and so on was made in 1889. Dr. Brown Seca reported that he removed one of the testicles of a vigorous two-year-old dog, cut the organ into little pieces, and put the pieces into a mortar, adding a little water, and mashed them to obtain as much juice as possible. He filtered the juice and collected about 4 cubic centimeters of a rather transparent pink liquid, which he injected into the muscles of his own leg.
And every time he went by a hydrant, something happened.
No, but listen to this. According to the report, his report, the following day, it really worked fast. The following day...
He wanted a dog biscuit.
And even more so after that, he recovered all the strength he had possessed many years ago. And... you know, these books are so funny. You don't think these are humorous, but they really are. Well, he recovered all the vigor he had possessed many years ago, and he resumed his old habit of running. Now, wait till I tell you what his habit was. You're laughing too early.
I just saw running.
His old habit of running up and down stairs, and tests with a dynamometer showed that his strength increased considerably.
Let's go out and get a dog.
Well, can you imagine that? Now, some of these others are just as interesting as that. This fellow, Serge Voronov, the son of a rich Russian manufacturer, moved to France in 1884, and he occupied the chair of experimental surgery at the Collège de France in Paris. That's one of the most reputable in the world. He introduced and practiced transplantation of testicles from chimpanzees, gibbons, and orangutans to his patients. And at the height of his career, he lectured all over the world about his newly discovered fountain of youth. It's estimated that Voronov... You're freaking me out. Voronov...
became a orangutan. Oh, boy. Married a gorilla.
No, they're jumping through
the table. He's 5,000 of these transplants. Can you imagine that? People running around with
organizable organs in them.
I think I know one guy like that.
And you know what? Now, you've been looking for a role.
What we have here is...
Do you know how much he charged for each transplant?
This is
five. For which he charged $5,000. Now, I figured that up. It says that he did 2,000 transplants. You figure 2,000 times $5,000. And that's $10 million that man made from his transplants. $10 million, Larry. You think you're going to be able to make that with your anti-smoking lectures?
No, no. And what about taxes? Do you have to pay taxes on that?
In France, they get by without paying taxes, I guess, if they can.
Do you have to donate anything to the orangutan fund?
Probably so. Well, anyhow...
Well, let's see what we have. Let me do a state. We have a spot here. We'll be right back.
Is your loss of hair bothering you? If so, Hair Replacement Center of Boston at 738-0884 can help. Hair Replacement Center, the league leader of men's hair replacement, has over 45 clinics throughout the country and has helped restore natural-looking hair to thousands of men. Besides offering various non-medical methods of treatment, Hair Replacement Center of Boston was the first to specialize in hair implants and introduced implants to the Boston area and most cities throughout the country. At Hair Replacement Center of Boston, in as little as 2 hours, you can receive a full head of natural-looking hair. So call Hair Replacement Center of Boston right away. Speak to one of our professional consultants to arrive at the best method to solve your hair loss problem. For the greater Boston area, call 738-0884. That's 738-0884. Call anytime between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. at 738-0884. Other hair replacement centers in New England are located in Worcester, Manchester, and Portland, Maine.
Watergate. This morning, a Senate subcommittee begins probing one of the most explosive cases ever to involve the White House. WBZ Radio's Washington News Bureau will bring you extensive live coverage of this historic testimony. Listen with us beginning at 10 this morning.
There's not much time left, but if you hurry, you can still get on board the ferry.
They're just at the beginning of their work.
Right from Boston to Bermuda.
Two six-night cruises. And the weather's just right now for cruising. The British Registered Ambassador is the newest ship coming to Boston. Every cabin is air-conditioned with wall-to-wall carpeting, telephone, and, of course, your own private bathroom. And you'll enjoy the swimming pool, great entertainment, and many other fine features on the new Ambassador while you're sailing. Then you'll have the delight of visiting Bermuda as well. The May 19th and 25th cruises are in Bermuda for almost 3 full days while the ship is your hotel. Reserve your place now on either the 6-night, May 19th, or 25th cruises. Call Crimson Travel Service at 742-8500. That's Crimson Travel, 742-8500. 28 minutes after 12. The Spirit of New England, WBZ Boston Group W, Westinghouse Broadcasting.
Well, all right, Larry, if you want to really read an interesting book on how to keep young and live longer,
right.
It's by Joseph Prachovic. He's a medical doctor and a doctor of science, and the book is published out in Los Angeles by the Sherborne Press.
Sherborne.
Okay. I'll tell you a little more about it some of these nights.
All right, Street Stewart.
Buenas noches, amigo.
Buenas noches, amigo. Voy a vacarse la cona maya. Hasta luego, amigo. Si, senor. Hasta luego. Que se dice, molt ben. $5,000 for an operation. And he had $2,000. That's a lot of Breadsville. Adios, muchachos. Where are we here now? Let's do this one, and then we'll be right back, and who knows what we're going to do. We'll take a call or two. I'd like to take a call or two first, and then we'll see, and we'll have some people from the circus.
And another thing about that husband of yours. He's ridiculous.
Mom.
Why is he buying you flowers today? It's not your birthday. It's not your anniversary.
But they're
flowers. I know, very romantic. But in the middle of the week, he hasn't got anything more important on his mind.
But, Mom, he bought those flowers for you.
For me? So who needs a special occasion to buy flowers? I mean, flowers don't grow only on special occasions. And you know something? You don't really appreciate it.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls, John. See, we have. It's 12:30. Hello, WBZ, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, who's this? Who's this?
All right, that's what she's going to do. Leave her name at that.
So, because Mr. Wheeler, if she just calls in there and she gets just the help or anybody, this won't go through the desk or to do that, or I mean, I'm asking her.
Yeah.
And
right.
Then I will call
right,
you.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago.
Stand up and hook up.
Well, anyways, I called you about that that man, Dr. Flanagan.
Oh,
out in California.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was waiting for, I sent the thing in the mail, you know, to get what you had to say about the pyramids, and
yeah.
I haven't got it yet, and I was wondering if you got your... your things on the pyramid yet?
No.
You don't know... I heard you talking about you might build some sort of a structure over your bed or something.
Yeah,
you know?
John DeTroy is going to build it for me when we get it.
Yeah, you know, I'm quite interested in that because lately I've been feeling pretty down, you know.
How come, Bill?
Well, there's a few things, you know. One thing, of course, is I got some shrapnel in my leg. You know, that's one thing that sort of is bogging me down.
Can't they take that stuff out?
Well, I was at the hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, and they got some of it out, but there's part of it in my spine, so they said the best thing, you know, would be to wait for a while. I just want to say that one of the best things has been to keep me in good spirits has been listening to your show.
Hey, Bill, you're okay.
Well, you know, yeah, it's really, you know, because I graduated from high school, great school down in the north end of Boston, Christopher what? Columbus High School.
Right.
In 1969, and I believe you were on the air then.
Yes, I was.
Right, and I used to listen to you at nighttime when I was supposed to be studying. And I remember I graduated in 69, and then I went into the Marines. And when I came back here, I was sort of dejected because, you know, things sort of changed, but your show was still on, and it's still as great as ever. I've been listening to you.
Bill, you're okay, you said.
Well, but...
do you work at all now?
Well, no, I have a part-time job.
Yeah.
With the city. And,
What city? Boston?
Right, yeah.
You live in the North End?
No.
Are you of Italian descent?
How do you know?
Well, you said you were born in the North End.
No, I went to school there.
Are you of Italian descent?
Well, partly.
Partly what?
Partly Italian descent.
What's the other partly?
Irish.
Isn't it funny? You know, there's so many people that are Irish. I've been bumping into people that are half Irish and half Italian. That's a good mixture, you know that?
I guess so. I met
some nice people, half Irish and half Italian, just lately. All of a sudden,
yeah.
Maybe I have been asking people before, but that's a nice mixture. They get a little bit from both.
Yeah. Hey, Larry, you know what? Have you been down a lot then lately?
No.
It hasn't changed that much. You know, there's one place in Boston that seems to be, you know, I love the place. You know, it's just...
Hey, Bill, who was your father Irish or Italian?
Oh, my father was Irish.
He had an Irish name in the North End?
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
That made you a tough kid, right?
Well, yeah. So
what's your last name?
Huh?
What's your last name?
Kelly.
They said, hey, Kelly in the North End. They said, hey, look at the Irish kid in the North End, Kelly.
Yeah.
And then you said a few Italian words to him,
no,
right?
We had a lot of kids. Of course, I went to a Catholic high school down there.
Yeah.
You know, and we had the Franciscan Fathers, who were, I think, are the greatest guys in the world. You know, as I said, when I came back, I've been dejected because things have sort of changed.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed it, but I don't know. It's just not the same, the spirit and so forth that people usually had before. It seems that things have sort of gone downward.
Hey, Kelly.
Uh-huh.
Everything changes. Everything.
Right, but...
People change. People... Places.
Hard to deal with it.
Everything. Well, you have to learn to adjust. You have to learn to adjust, Kelly, and you can do it.
I'm finding myself going backwards, like I'm finding myself sort of, you know, living on the past and not what's going on today. And that's the problem, you know.
Well, sometimes it's a little more difficult to adjust, but you can adjust, though.
I think so. I don't think it'll be any type of problems, but, you know.
I've got confidence in you, and I know you can do it.
I know I can, too. You know, it's self-hypnosis, you know. I don't know too much about it, but I know it's confidence in yourself.
You can do it. You can't change anything. You know, people change and attitudes change. Just learn to adjust to it, and you can do it. He's got problems, and yours are baby problems.
Right. That's what I've been telling myself.
As a matter of fact, Nixon would like to change with you right now.
I guess so.
Yeah, Nixon would say, you know, the people in the North End are not the way they were when I grew up.
It's a great place, though. If there's one thing that I've enjoyed is, you know, just going backwards in time, you know, and going back to the school days, you know. And it used to be hard to get up in the morning, you know, and go to school every day. But we really had our laughs, you know.
Listen, I gotta go, Kelly. But
yeah, I got one thing I wanted to tell you was, I know you call all these different people, you know, of interest.
Right.
And I was wondering, you know, have you ever heard of an author called Norman Mailer?
Oh, I interviewed him, sure.
Right. Oh, geez, I wish you could interview him again because I saw him on TV one time about, three weeks ago.
He's pretty wild.
He's really funny. He's interesting, too.
Yeah, he's a wild guy.
Oh, he is, right. Do you think there's any chance of you getting him in the future?
Yeah.
Oh, good enough.
You're the first one that rasped for him.
Yeah, I guess he can be sort of rash.
Yeah. Oh, he can. I'll see you later,
Okay, take it easy, Larry.
Hey,
right.
And you feel better now, and each day that goes by...
Every time I talk to you or listen to you, I feel great. This is the best hour of the day.
So long, Cal.
Right. Take it easy now, Larry. Right.
Hi, this is BZ's Network Ned Foster with a reminder for those who have not yet registered for the Boston Junior Marathon. Call 265-0080 or write to Junior Marathon, Brighter Day, 386 Washington Street, Dorchester, 02124.
Is your loss of hair bothering you? If so, Hair Replacement Center of Boston at 738-0884 can help. Hair Replacement Center, the league leader of men's hair replacement, has over 45 clinics throughout the country and has helped restore natural-looking hair to thousands of men. Besides offering various non-medical methods of treatment, Hair Replacement Center of Boston was the first to specialize in hair implants and introduced implants to the Boston area and most cities throughout the country. At Hair Replacement Center of Boston, in as little as 2 hours, you can receive a full head of natural-looking hair. So call Hair Replacement Center of Boston right away. Speak to one of our professional consultants to arrive at the best method to solve your hair loss problem. For the greater Boston area, call 738-0884. That's 738-0884. Call anytime between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. at 738-0884. Other hair replacement centers in New England are located in Worcester, Manchester, and Portland, Maine.
And now we switch down to Boston Garden or wherever these people are staying. And as I mentioned earlier, I had the pleasure of seeing the circus, the Ringling Brothers Circus, the greatest show on earth. And it was really a fantastic show. And the ringmaster is our first guest down there. His name is Tim Holtz. Hello there, Tim Holtz.
Hello, Mr. Larry Glick. How are you?
Fine. I was in there waving to you, and you did a great job with that microphone. That was a great show.
Well, wonderful. We're glad you enjoyed it.
How long have you been with the circus, Tim Holtz?
This is my second year with the show.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah.
What made you join the circus?
Well, I was working as a summer stock actor up in Montana and inquired about the circus. And the promoters saw me, and I started out as a clown last year. I went through the Ringling Brothers Fun and Baited Clown College.
Where is that?
That's Florida.
Where is
that? That's 19 miles south of Sarasota.
Oh, yeah.
On the coast.
Do they have the school? How long a school is it, and what do you learn?
Well, the school for clowns is a nine-week course. If you're accepted by Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, and... the year I went, there were about 1,500 applications, and I was very fortunate to be one of the 50 students selected to go to the school.
How do you audition for the clown school?
Well, both through a personal audition through the director of clowns, Mr. Bill Ballantyne, and then interviews and written applications.
How many clowns do they have?
I think we have 28 clowns on the show this year.
And there's one director of clowns. That's interesting. You know, when we see the... when we as spectators see the circus, we forget the behind-the-scene activities. Holy, like there's a director of clowns. Most of us just see the clowns. We say, well, there's just a few of them there. They put on the makeup and off they go. They just take off and perform. But there's a director, and he probably watches them and watches their performance, right?
Yes. It's pretty well organized with our clowns. We try and move with the times and... have a well-organized group of clowns, and there are an excellent bunch of clowns this year on the show, and I think that you'll be talking to some of the better clowns. We have Mr. Prince Paul will be a guest on your show a little later on, and he's quite a trooper and a wonderful, delightful clown.
And then you did the clown act for 1 year.
Uh-huh.
And then what happened?
And then during the course of the year, I was an understudy to the ringmaster last year, Mr. Harold Bronk. And he'd been on the show for quite a number of years, and Mr. Feld, the owner and producer of Ringling Brothers, Barnum Bailey.
Who was it? What's his name?
Mr. Irvin Feld.
Yeah, right.
And the producer of the circus auditioned me, and I won the part for the ringmaster job. So here I am in Boston.
Hey, Tim.
Uh-huh.
There may be some people listening now, some kids out Give him a little introduction to some of the trapeze people. And in this ring, give us a little bit of that, will you, please? And the various Italian and Polish names and German names.
And German names.
Right.
Well, one of my favorites is that we have a backward somersault, four man high, performed in all three rings. From Romania, in ring one, the Muzianos. How's that?
Yeah, go ahead. And in the center ring, ring two.
And in ring two, from Hungary, the Verides.
And in ring three.
And in ring three, from Poland,
right.
The Forish.
I'll tell you, that was really an exciting act. That was,
yes, they're spectacular.
And sometimes they'd, the first one of the ring one missed, you know, and fell in the net. And there was a shriek from the lady sitting next to me. She frightened me. The guy that landed the net wasn't frightened. That was quite a scene, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
They need that net.
Oh, it's very dangerous about it. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen anything? Let me ask you something, Tim. What about those lions and tigers? Do they ever react adversely? Have they ever bitten or struck or clawed one of the trainers?
Well,
that you know of?
It's been my experience that a couple of times I've seen them. He received a few stitches over the top of his eye, and those accidents kind of happen. But you can never completely trust a wild animal like that. You have to be on your guard, as those trainers are, every moment while you're out there. In that
where place. Is that? Where is that lion? Lion tail from?
He's from Spain, Mr. Pablo Noel.
He looks like a short. What the heck is it? His name just popped out of my mind. I see him right before me. He looks like a short. I'm thinking of a movie actor.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't recall.
I'll think of it. Isn't that funny? He was a Cross 125th Street. I think that was his latest picture.
Oh, yeah.
What a great actor. He's been in a million pictures. A million, I mean.
Did you enjoy that when he put his head in the lion's mouth?
That's what I was going to talk about. Yes, he put his head in the lion's, several of the lion's mouths.
He does it both for the lion and the lioness.
Right. That was amazing.
And he has command over those animals.
Right. He's from Spain.
He's from Spain.
How many of these entertainers, the people that do the high wire act and all these different type of acts, how many are American? Are there many Americans in this group?
Well, I don't know anything to talk about. Not mine.
New York, they're American. Clowns are basically
put up with Americans.
And the showgirls are Americans, but there's also a majority of the acts, however, that are from the European countries.
Why is that?
Because of the strong circus tradition there.
Yeah. Well, there aren't any American.
Well, I think that would be much more exciting.
Why wouldn't there be any American acts? Like the man in the flying trapeze and the high wire and so forth.
Well, our trapeze act this year happens to be from Mexico. That's just the way our booking has worked out for this year, that there aren't any American acts on the show. But I think I can make a generalized statement that basically, because of the strong nature of the circus in Europe, that's where we obtain most of our circus acts from. So we bring them over to the States, and I think we have a shortage, if I can say, of good, strong American acts that haven't been seen. So we need to have circus acts here in America. The circus over in Europe.
I wonder what he was talking about, you know. Centuries
old, and this is our 102nd year.
Well, I'm ready. Now, you say you have a 9x12 rug in a 12x15 room.
Right.
Well, I think I'd get.
Now, where do you travel? How many months out of the year do you travel?
Hello. That's pretty good. You wouldn't get advice like that on the Mike Levine show.
No.
Well, only.
Who's the straw boss that seems to be setting up all of these things?
Well, our company manager, Lloyd Morgan.
Is he like Charlton Heston?
Yes, I can say so.
There's no fooling around. He wants it done right.
He wants it done.
Anthony Quinn. I finally got Anthony Quinn.
Anthony Quinn. Oh yeah, yeah.
He does look like a short Anthony Quinn.
That's right.
Doesn't he?
Anthony Quinn. Yes, that's right. The way his hair is.
He looks like a short Anthony Quinn. As a matter of fact, most of those men on the trapeze, most of them are short, aren't they?
Yeah, they're, well.
They're short guys, or is it where we were sitting?
Well, they're not all short. There are a couple who are short men.
Yeah. But they can really swing in those trapeze.
Oh, absolutely. That's breathtaking.
Yeah. So now you enjoy this more as being a ringmaster than a clown, right?
Well, it's more of a. Of course, I miss clowning. I was a tremendous opportunity, and I enjoyed not only working with the children, but I enjoyed being a clown and having people respond to me as a clown and getting the laughs. But I see the circus now in a different light, in a more of an overall perspective of the entire panorama of the circus. And it's a marvelous opportunity because I see I hear all the oohs and the ahs of the spectators, and I'm with them, each performer, it seems like, in each of their tricks. And so I have my eyes in different lights, and I enjoy my job. Tremendous opportunity to be a host to audiences all over the United States and Canada every day, and entertaining children of all ages.
Speaking of children, I was telling Streeter Stewart, our newsman, a moment ago that I was sitting in the stands, and would you believe this? A lady had a young child in her lap, and all of a sudden I smelled something and looked over, and it wasn't the elephant or the lions and tigers going, but it was this woman changing the child's diaper next to me. That was really fun.
It can only happen in a circus.
Only happen in a circus. Everybody was dripping. This red frozen ice on me and hot dog, mustard juice, kids getting diapers changed, and you in the middle saying, and in ring one, it's the Hofacate from Brazil.
But do you feel like the atmosphere of the circus is still with us?
Oh, yeah, I would say so, sure. Oh, I enjoyed it, sure. I think it was...
And so you enjoyed the cotton candy and the peanuts and the clowns and the...
Well, I enjoyed it. I didn't eat any
waffle.
4,000 kids are. No, I think the next time I go at night, I think.
Uh-huh.
At night when they're. It's four children. Enjoy these high wire acts. They're very, very thrilling.
Oh, yes, indeed.
What was the most interesting thing that happened? As the ringmaster or the clown would bring in front of the circus.
A few tenors.
Well, not the most exciting. What about the most interesting? Or something that's outstanding.
I think one of the outstanding experiences, and this happens not in every city, but in some cities, is when it's a big opening. For example, in the Garden in New York City, or here in Boston, when the clowns have done their first, what we call a warm-up or a come-in, they've worked 20 minutes before the show to warm up the audience and to entertain them, and the lights go down and the overture starts, and you hear that roar of the crowd when the ringmaster announces the greatest show on earth, and you can actually sense that. That's a spine-tickling feeling, and it runs through the cast, through all the performers, and those kind of experiences, it seems to be something that continually happens, whether we're in San Francisco or Boston or Toronto or wherever we're playing, that kind of a feeling is present in the circus, and I think that has to be one of the most entertaining or most amazing aspects of the circus to me, is that continually happens.
Yeah,
regardless of where we're playing.
Tim, let me just tell this one story, then we have two messages, then we'll be back. But
okay.
When I was watching, you know, when the horses come by and they leave stuff along and they have these guys with the shovels and the brooms picking it up.
Uh-huh.
So there's a story, it's an old story about this one fellow, and that was his job, to pick up the stuff that the elephants and tigers and lions left, you know, and they run around with shovels and broom, pick it all up, put it in the barrel. And when he came home, his wife said, Charlie, he says, you stink. You smell awful when you get home. And she can't get another job. And they said, no, it's the same job. So finally she kept saying, she says, Charlie, I can't stand the smell. She says, why don't you get another job? He said, and what? Give up show business? we'll be right back after this, Tim.
Okay.
It's sad, but it's a fact. Homes are needed on a temporary basis for boys and girls from 7 to 17 years of age, and of all religions and races, who are awaiting court appearances. Would you be?
My name on it, though. Make sure you people, you know.
Call it. 523-51.
That's great. He's going to make me some sausage.
0884 can help. Here are my understanding. Leader of men has over 45 minutes to run the country. And has helped restore natural air to thousands of
my God.
Besides offering various non-medical methods of treatment, Hair Replacement Center of Boston was the first to specialize in hair implants and introduced implants to the Boston area and most cities throughout the country. At Hair Replacement Center of Boston, in as little as 2 hours, you can receive a full head of natural-looking hair. So call Hair Replacement Center of Boston right away. Speak to one of our professional consultants to arrive at the best method to solve your hair loss problem. For the greater Boston area, call 738-0884. That's 738-0884. Call anytime between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. at 738-0884. Other hair replacement centers in New England are located in Worcester, Manchester, and Portland, Maine.
Okay, we're talking with Tim Holtz, who's the ringmaster at Ringling Brothers, Bob & Bailey in Boston now.
Right.
And there's... I guess, what about you? You're an actor. What if someone offered you a deal? Would you go back in legitimate theater, or would you stay with the children?
Well,
you gotta be careful, the boss may be listening.
Right. Well, I hope he is. No, he understands my loyalty. Right now, this is a tremendous opportunity for me. And I'm wanting to make the most of my type of a career. And I can't say that I've made any final decisions. I want to do the best job that I can for the circus while I'm here. And I take each day and each performance as it comes, and each season as it rolls around. So I really can't answer that question.
What about your wife? Are you married?
No, I'm single.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a great life for you to be married.
Oh, well, I'm engaged. We're going to be married. We play at Salt Lake on the 22nd of August. And I'll be married before the show opens there.
And would she travel with you?
She'll travel with me, right.
Now, where do you people stay? Like, where do you stay now? Where are you?
Well, I'm at the Sonesta Hotel right now.
Oh, yeah, in Cambridge.
And, but we have, the circus owns a 32-car train. And it is the longest and one of the biggest trains in the world. And that transports the animals, the rigging, and all the performers, if they choose, all across the nation.
Oh, so you can live right in the train.
You can live right on the train.
What about Tim Holtz? You'd rather live in the hotel.
No, I have a room on the train, and I stay there. We're just happy to be here right now.
Oh, I see. Oh, I got it. You have a... that's interesting. It's fixed up as a regular living quarters,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And so, on an opening day, the train pulls into town, and the performers and the animals head for the building. And when the show closes and it's time to move on to the next city, they load them all up and off we go.
Well, that's amazing. That's a very...
We have a community on wheels here.
Yeah. That's how many cars in the train?
I think there's 30 cars. And we have a bus that transports us from the building back to the train. We have our own postman, takes care of the mail. And we're living a regular life, and yet we're on the move as caravans.
And So there, how many trains are there? There's one in New York and one in Boston.
One in Boston right now, yes.
Those are the red and the blue shows, right?
Right.
Is one show better than the other?
Well,
this is the
honest. We're the best unit of the show. But I think if you ask people over in the red unit, they'd say they're the best. But it's the best no matter how you look at it.
But in each circus, the center ring is the best act, right?
I'm sitting here talking.
Or is it?
No, it's not. I thought it was. Try to balance the act. So that, and I don't think that any one ring is given any more favorable attention than any of the others. We try and hold the attention of each ring.
Hello.
Maybe,
I think it is, huh? I just say hi.
The guy usually
gets on his head, you know, turn into radio. Yeah.
I'm
one of
your
serious visitors. Sure you are.
And I'm kind of interested in perhaps adoption. And I don't know where to start.
Start with that.
Words alone can't describe Falstaff beer, because you can't taste words, but you can taste quality. And Falstaff is America's premium quality beer.
We're all in this together, and we made it clear. Falstaff is America's premium quality beer.
It's 2:30 for one. We'll be right back. I'll get the 1 o'clock news.
All right, bring in that slimy creep for holding on the obscene phone calls. Go over there and sit down, bad mouth.
All right, go over. Copper.
I'm going to lock you up and throw away the key, boy.
You can take that key and tie it to your... Sure, lock.
All right, tough guy, now you're asking for it.
Why don't you go take a... Get a rolling gun on
it. Now look, boy, don't honk me off.
Well, don't f*** me off.
Well, the department's gonna see to it you don't call no more women and use words like... And I can't even read this one.
You never did it.
Well,
you bet your sweet to have you.
Now, what's your name, Badmouth?
My name is George.
Did you say?
Yeah, I said.
Spelled T.
Yes, spelled T.
Just like it sounds.
I'd like to take that badge and pin it to your tiny little.
That'll be the day, boy, when you take my badge and pin it to my tiny little. Hello? Yeah, Commissioner.
Is that the Commissioner? Him too.
You sit down there, boy, and keep your bad mouth shut. Commissioner, we're holding a boy here on obscene phone calls. Yeah, his name is... T. Well, now you got me there. He's been carrying on, so I haven't had a chance to ask him. I'll ask him right now. Boy, what do you do for a living?
I'm professor of English literature at Slippery Stone University, specializing in 15th century culture appreciation.
You.
Flatfoot.
It's a guy with Archie.
Good morning. This is Carlos Hughes. Now I'll be seeing you in 5 hours on Radio 103.
The Stern of New England, WBZ Boston Group, W Westinghouse Broadcast. It's 50 degrees in Boston. Tonight's going to be 47. I'm Street Glick reporting the 1 o'clock WBZ News. Well,
Officials of the Skylab mission are trying to determine which will be the best method of protecting the 118-foot spacecraft from intense solar radiation. So far, the field has been narrowed to three types of shield, two of which will require a spacewalk. The third would involve projecting an umbrella-like device out through an airlock and opening it. If either of the two methods calling for a spacewalk are used, it'll be the first time a flying spacecraft was repaired by men outside. The spacewalk operations are regarded as relatively simple. With a special report, here's Jim Slade.
Skylab has been something of a stepchild of Apollo. Originally, the space station program was to have been flown during the Apollo missions, probably as early as 1968. But the fire which killed three astronauts in 1967 put a stop to that, stopped space flight entirely until program defects were cleaned up. Skylab was to use some of the Apollo equipment, and it stopped too. As it restructured itself, Skylab was slotted by the space agency as a follow-up to Apollo. Here was a chance to logically follow the more esoteric moon flights with more practical studies of the Earth. The trouble was that since in appearance a lot of Skylab's machinery came out of Apollo, nobody in Congress and some in NASA thought it would be needful to get a great deal of preliminary testing. In theory, that's absolutely correct. It may turn out, though, that it was a grievous error. Looking closely, only the Apollo spacecraft and the Skylab housing, a third-stage Saturn rocket, are off-the-shelf hardware. The rest is all new, never flown in space before. One of the all-new parts, a shield around the Skylab fuselage, came off during launch, and a lot of bad things have happened since then. They may get it fixed, probably will. It's too bad, though, that it didn't work the first time. Probably could have. Jim Slade at Group W Skylab headquarters in Washington.
WBZ News Time, 2.5 minutes after one.
A blind student must study with textbooks. Help us provide the needed thousands of textbooks in Braille. BZ says, give to the National Braille Association, Midland Park, New Jersey.
The latest casualty of the Watergate crisis is the 36-year-old head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, G. Bradford Cook. He held the post for only 10 weeks. Cook quit his post today following grand jury charges of influence peddling. He denied any wrongdoing, saying that he was just caught in a web of circumstance. Treasury Secretary George Shultz has some good news for businessmen. Shultz says the administration's economic game plan will not be immobilized by the Watergate. He says the Phase 3 economic program is working to control inflation. Shultz added that the administration intends to make good on its budget pledge to hold back spending in the current fiscal year. Shultz spoke before a trade seminar audience of 250 executives in Washington Tuesday. Now the weather for Boston and vicinity for the rest of this morning. Clear with lowest temperature around 50. And Thursday, increasing cloudiness with showers likely by the afternoon. Highest temperatures in the upper 60s. Thursday night, showers ending, followed by partly windy and turning cooler. Friday, fair and cool with the highest temperatures in the upper 50s. Probability of precipitation, 50% Thursday and Thursday night. In Boston now, it's 50 degrees. Hi, sports fans, and a BZ scoreboard. In the American League, Detroit beat Boston in 10 innings, 6-5. Yankees 11, Milwaukee 4. Texas 2, Kansas City 1. Minnesota 8, Chicago White Sox 6. In the National League, Philadelphia 5, Pittsburgh 2. Mets 8, Montreal 3. St. Louis 3, Chicago Cubs 1. In 11 innings, Atlanta 6 and Houston 2. That's it, sports fans, the top story of the hour. Officials of the Skylab mission are trying to determine which will be the best method of protecting the 118-foot spacecraft from intense solar radiation. That's the 1 o'clock WBZ report. I'm Streeter Glick, WBZ News. It's possible to quit smoking. 30 million Americans have already, and you can too. It's a matter of life and breath. And now we're going to chat with a few more people at Ringling Brothers Circus. I was there this afternoon, and I like a circus. And the clowns were there. And right now we're going to speak to LaVoy Hips down at Clown Alley. Hello there, LaVoy Hips.
Hello there. How are you?
Very good. How long have you been a clown, LaVoy?
This is my fifth year with Ringling Brothers Circus.
And how did you get your job?
Well, I went through the first Ringling Brothers Clown College in 1968. And that was the first year for the circus, you know, the first year the blue unit and the red unit, or, you know, the one that we call the red unit now, was the old circus, more or less. And in 68, Mr. Felt decided to have two units. And so I started out with the first one, which is the blue unit now.
And how long, what sort of, how long was the training?
We went through 6 weeks. The first school was. Now you go through 8 weeks of a clown college.
Well, what do you learn? Who teaches you?
Well, I learned from Lou Jacobs, Otto Fridlin, Danny Chapman, Willie Krause, who is a retired circus trapeze artist.
Can you do
it? You know, people like that that live in the Sarasota community.
Yeah, can you learn anything yourself? I mean, can you get a new routine and...
Oh, yeah, I do different routines right now that I've learned myself, you know, that we pick up over a period of years.
Do they mind you doing that?
No, sir.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the things that you do and what entertains the people the most.
Well, I think in a clown gag, to start with, you have to have something with action. You have to have a beginning and a blow-off. And what you do in between is sort of building up to the blow-off. The main part of a clown gag is your final shock, you know, like the guy coming out of the cannon.
Oh, yeah,
with
right.
The little man hanging upstairs,
yeah.
You know, that's the blow-off. So what happens before then, you're just trying to get the attention.
What did you do today? I want to see if I know which
what
one.
What did I do today? Okay. I do, you were at the first show.
Yes.
All right, in the come-in, which is the 20 minutes before the show,
right.
I do a rug gag. We take a rug and we try to lay, you know, put the rug down.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The guy's sitting there and he's in the way, you know, so we have to figure out how to put this rug down. So we pick him up and that doesn't work. There's nobody to roll the carpet. So we roll it over top of him. We take some big scissors, cut a hole in it, put it out, pick him up, put the piece we cut out there, and that, you know, that's the best way to do it.
Now, what else did you do?
I'm the stilt walker.
You are?
I'm the stilt walker.
You son of a gun, LaVoy Hips. Hey, how high? You must have been 20 feet high.
Well, I only stand about 15.
About 15?
Yes, sir.
That's really up there. I'll tell you, you will really walk with that, though.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to do that?
Well, I got right on these in 68. I've been walking these particular stilts in 68, and I started off on small ones.
Can you describe what the stilts are?
Well, they're just two-by-twos, piece of wood, or, you know, oak wood or pine. Depends on how high you want to go, what kind of type of wood you want to use. And then I have real small feet on the bottom, and I have my foot and my leg is strapped into the stilt at 7.5 feet high. I just, you know, sit down on a ladder, 10-foot ladder, stick my foot in, my boot is stationary on the stilt itself, strap my foot around and take off, drop my britches and go.
Wait a minute, you sit on a ladder.
I sit on a 10-foot ladder.
Right.
Okay, and I have two, you know, stilts. They're 7.5 feet high.
Right.
I have a boot which is stationary on the stilt.
Right.
It's a regular combat boot.
Right.
And I lace that up. Then I take a strap and put it right above the calf, my leg.
Right.
Right below the knee, which makes it permanent, you know, stationary.
Right.
So that if I, you know, turn my ankle or my foot, the stilt will move with me. So I know exactly where that foot is, even though it's 7.5 feet from my foot.
But it was bending, though. Like, it appeared as if he had knees. It was bending, like.
You know, I don't understand that, because a lot of people have told me that, but I can't see it myself.
Yeah, it looks like it's bending, as if there's a knee there.
Well, it's not.
Huh?
It's not.
But
it's just the way I do it, I think.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, it looks like your knee is there's a knee in it at about, you're about 15 feet high. It looks at about, at about 6 or 7 feet high. There's a knee there.
And it looks like it's bending. You know, you're regular walking.
Yeah.
But it's just my foot.
Obviously.
My foot. Yeah. And, I walk on my heels more than I do on the front of my feet, and I think that's the reason. The other stilt walkers don't get that.
Well, it's very impressive, I'll tell you that.
I walk on my heel more, and so that's the reason you get the effect of, you know, my foot's really bending, you know, the hinges. And people suggest that I got hinges on it, and I can, you know, do a lot of things with it, but it's really just...
Now, what about, is Emmett Kelly one of the top Is he one of the top clowns in the country?
I hate to tell you the truth. Well, in Clown Alley, we don't feel so, because we knew Otto Griffin, who passed away last April, and Otto taught Emmett Kelly.
Right.
You know, as such, this is a story that we've got. You know, I've met Emmett Kelly and I know him. But as far as the circus goes nowadays, we don't really know the new clowns, which I am a new clown, because he was with the circus 15 years ago, maybe.
Right.
And so now all we know is he does the commercials and he does the, you know, Lake Tahoe and nightclub. And to us, that's a completely different clowning than it is in the Ringling Brothers show.
What circuit? Who was Emmett Kelly with?
He is with nobody. He's right now. He works on his own.
Who was he with, though? What circus was he with?
He was with the Ringling show.
Yeah.
At one time. Now, I, you know, truthfully, I don't know for sure. All I know is what I've heard. And he was with a few other circuses. Maybe Prince Paul could tell you later.
Who's Prince Paul?
Prince Paul will be speaking with you later on tonight.
Who's he?
He is our king of Clown Alley, really. He's the greatest clown we have.
Prince Paul.
Prince Paul. He was the king in the speck. The little man that stands up on top of the platform that goes up with the...
Oh, yeah. How tall?
King.
Oh, how tall is he?
I really don't know. 4 foot something.
Yeah.
If he's that tall, I don't really know.
Yeah. Well, listen, LaVoy Hips, I want to thank you. And what really breaks the kids up the most, before you go, what's the funniest thing that the children enjoy as far as the clowns are concerned?
I think the pie in the face, or the balloons
breaking. The pie in the face, I didn't see that.
You didn't see that? Oh, we throw pies all over the place.
Huh?
We throw pies all over the place.
No, I didn't... So,
you were probably watching the cannon gag at the same
time. I was,
time.
Yeah, I was watching the cannon gag.
All right, the Baker's gag, which was myself, Dougie Ashton, Mark, Prince Paul, Ron, and Bob Castro. We're all down in the other ring throwing pies in the face at that time.
And I missed, there's so much to see, folks. I missed that.
Well, that's the reason I think they have, this is the greatest show on earth, too.
Yeah.
Because there's so much going on. That even if you went back 3 days in a row, you would still see something that you didn't see the day before.
Yeah. Well, this is LaVoy Hips. I want to thank you very much.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back after this message.
Framingham is going to be a healthier place this weekend, and smokers will breathe easier by attending the Larry Glick Stop Smoking Course. Larry will conduct his course at the Framingham Regional YMCA this Saturday and Sunday afternoons from 2 until 5. The complete tuition is $20 for YMCA members and $25 for non-members. For reservations, call 879-4420. That's 879-4420. Or you may register in person an hour before the course. Larry Glick has 12 years' experience instructing and motivating persons in completing relaxing sessions. You know, you can quit, too. So, smokers, do yourself a favor. Take the Larry Glick Stop Smoking Course this weekend. Call the Framingham YMCA to register. The number again is 879-4420. It may be a very important phone number for you. 879-4420.
Well, we have one more. We have one more. Charlie DiGiovanni. His name is Prince Paul.
Okay.
Prince Paul. And let's. Hello there, Prince Paul.
Hi, Larry Glick.
Hey, Prince Paul, you got a deep voice. How tall are you, Prince Paul?
Soaking wet, about 47 and a half inches.
47 and a half, and you were up there, and that's the little skit that I was watching, the cannon act.
No, I wasn't that one. I was the little king in the Happy Land, you know, that does all the focal points and all the pantomime.
Oh,
the different characters that you saw coming up on the stage and finally... went up in the air.
Right. Oh,
that big robe, the cape, I should say.
Oh, yeah. How long have you been with the circus, Prince Paul?
Well, I just figured it out tonight. It's quite a way back, probably a little before your time. I came in the show in 1935. I was away 10 years. This is 73. So this year will be my 28th year with the Ringling Brothers.
Right. Where were you born?
Bangor, Maine. You ever hear of Bangor, Maine?
Bangor, yeah. I guess we did.
Something I would like to ask you.
Ask me anything.
What does Glick mean, luck or health?
Both, luck.
Right.
How'd you know?
Glick.
That's right. How'd you know that, Prince Paul?
Well, I don't know. I speak the language.
You son of a gun.
Yeah.
What about your mother and father? Were they short, Prince Paul?
Well, people always have that impression that little people come from short people. It's just a matter of a glandular malfunction of the pituitary gland that controls the distribution of the calcium.
But your folks were normal height?
Oh, yes. And in fact, my older sister brought me in the world. In those days, we didn't have doctors available, and she brought me in the world, and I often say, well, what'd you do with the other half or something?
Now, what was your real name, Prince Paul?
Paul Alpert, A-L-P-E-R-T.
Alpert.
And enjoying this sort of a homecoming. You know, this is my hometown, incidentally. I lived in Boston, you know, we moved from Bangor. And I graduated Rock Memorial High School in 1933.
Fine, Joe.
And I went out and, vaudeville was dying out, and the fellow and I, we didn't help it much. We played all the local bistros and theaters, window shops, we called it. You know, they were so small, you know. And I played everything. And I went up to a small show up in New England in 34. And the fellow said, you know, people asked me, how'd you get the name Prince? I'm surprised you didn't ask me that. Because every interview I ever do, they usually come around and ask, how'd you get the name Prince?
Well, I saw you and you looked like a prince. That's why I didn't ask you.
Well, thank you. But I got promoted. I was a king. I'm a king now.
Right.
the part I'm playing, I mean. The fellow that owned the show, he's a kind man, and he said, I'll give you the name, and this will people remember you, which has happened since, thanks to Ringling. And I sent a picture to the late Pat Bowell, the performance director, of myself, and he sent me a two-week contract. So I was never so excited, and about 2 weeks, and it can naturally be nervous, which meant that the time I didn't think anything about 2 weeks, it meant that it actually was an audition where they thought you were capable or good enough for the top thing. You know, like vaudeville, you played the palace, you were at the top. From all these, there's so many little small shows in the United States at that period, so when you got to Ringling, that was top. So consequently, they were very choosy, and the caliber of clowns they would hire. So it's been a steady job, so I put in the 28th year. But how you might mix up the dates of the fact that I was away 7 years down in the war. I wanted to do something for my country, and how I got into, I worked over Charles Navy, I was electric welder. How I got into that was funny. I went up to donate some blood, and the woman told me, that head nurse told me, says, you need 9 pints of blood in you, and you don't have that much. You need the blood more than we do. So that got me mad, and so I said, I'm going to do something. So I went over to the Navy Yard and applied for something I could do for my country. I was with the Ringling Show at that time. And there was a doctor. They said, how would you like to learn the welding? So we have a school here. I said, sure, anything. So they taught me welding. I was a slow learner, but I became very proficient at it after a while. It's a matter of mental, and it's like painting with a brush. And I became very adept at it, and I was valuable to our tight places, welding. So I stayed there for 3 years, 6 months, and after the war, the circus twisted my wrist and didn't take much of that, but I loved the show, and I went back with the circus. So going back with the circus in the Kentucky era, I don't know if you ever seen the big pop in those days.
Well, sometimes these ladies are going to change the whole thing. All right, they have one. Yes, sir.
There's only 3 clowns that were there. There were 60 at the time. There's Lou Jacobs, you know, Lou Jacobs of the Red Show, and myself, and Francis Little, that are still alive out of the 60 that were participating in the show.
Prince Paul, were you ever married? Are you married?
No, I'm not married. I traveling, and because I've had my romantic interlude, like anybody else, but I can find myself involved with the responsibility of children and the wife being way out of the business or in the business, it's too complicated. And I'm sort of a person who couldn't get to always have somebody else around me. I like to get through work, I like to read, and
more or less by myself. To be with somebody that left the time would be too much for me.
Well, what
so
do you?
I never got married.
What do you do with your time? I mean, now, do you? What do you do socially? How does a person live on a circus?
Myself particularly, or everybody? Everybody has a different vocation.
No, you.
What I do?
Yeah.
Well, what I do is I'm a great reader. I educate myself besides my school, and now with the advent of television and radio and all that, but radio's been on, I enjoy that, and then I have friends around the country because of the circus. I have made wonderful contacts in every field of endeavor, you know, that I would never, without the circus, I would never have met the great people that I've known, you know, movie stars. I was in the movie 1951 when we did The Greatest Show on Earth. I don't know if you ever saw that one, that movie we did. And because of that, I met many great celebrities and great stars of that era. And then, we just came from Washington, D.C., where I was at the, invited up to the White House, and I had dinner at their House of Representatives there twice. LeBoy Hips was there with me and another little fella. And it was very, very interesting, the circus life.
Say, Prince Paul, are there any... being 47 inches high, are there any problems, any social problems, physical problems that you have?
Well, no, I've been asked that many times. I think people that have any problems will have problems regardless of any height. If I have any problems, I either overcome it or get around it or find some solution or do without it.
Very good. Well, you're a very interesting person, and a very interesting person. What did you have any
mom? Well, that was a surprise to me. The daughter knew that I liked Jerry Bill.
I've been associated with so many people and so many kinds of people from the way down, the lower crust up to the top people, intellectuals, and associations of so many years that I find that people fall apart, and I make a game of finding out what happened to this one. I can always figure out what when somebody comes on the show, how good they're going to be, or I can tell whether they're sincere. I can tell what they're. And people fall apart like anything else, and I know almost ahead of time what's going to happen.
I wish I had interviewed you before I saw the show and I could see it. Hey, Prince Paul, so Simon Glick. Right. And now but I may see again. How long does the show be into
I've
been thinking for a long time about going to Russia, Poland, and some of the Scandinavian countries. But we didn't want to live out of a suitcase all that time. Roy Davis of Royal Travel. Beautiful tour where you have every minute programmed. This is a beautiful luxury. And you live in that same state room all the time, and you only unpack your suitcase.